you guys all three together. Hi, Butch.
Hey, guys. What's up?
I love it. Y'all look good. Y'all look healthy.
Thanks.
I hope that is all true. Is it?
It is today.
We're doing good.
Great.
I think it's great.
Butch, Earl, father, mother, son, I leave it up to you. Let's see if you two can out-talk Larsine.
I don't think so. No. I don't think anyone can do that.
Yeah.
And here we go.
Yeah, we don't have time, do we?
And here we go.
We got a whole hour. You can be the last speaker, so go for it.
Hi, everybody. My name is Larsine. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I want to go ahead and just say hi.
Yeah, Butch, alcoholic.
My name's Earl, and I'm an alcoholic.
And I want to thank Yvonne for the really privilege and honor for our family to get to be here and speak with you. And, you know, this whole thing about family love, it's definitely been a gift from Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon that we have what we have here, because we sure were, you know, on any given day, we're still family dysfunction. But, you know, because of the principles of the program and the steps, and because of the example of so many people that are, I am looking at right here, you know, our family thrives, and our family knows what love is, which is a miracle as far as I'm concerned. Coming into the, you know, when I first met Butch, I was 17 years old, which means I was wise beyond my years. Okay, anybody who's 17 knows how wise you are at that age, and I knew exactly what I wanted, and what I wanted was to get out of the home that I was living in, because my dad was alcoholic and very angry, mean one, and him and my mom had long ago stopped loving each other, and I just couldn't wait to get the heck out of there. And and when I met Butch, I saw my ticket out. You know, I mean, I grew up in a house where I didn't really know what love was, and for a long time, I blamed my parents for that. And in reality, what I know today is they couldn't teach me something they didn't have to give. And so I came into my relationship with Butch, you know, not really knowing what love was, but I was kind of focused on the whole Disney deal, you know, Cinderella, and he would rescue me, and we would live happily ever after, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and I really do believe that if someone would have showed me a video and said, hey, Larsine, you know, Butch is an alcoholic, and this is what your life is going to look like at the worst part, and they could have shown me that video prior to me getting married to him, and I, you know what, I know for a fact I still would have gone for it. I still would have absolutely positively gone for it, because how I'm affected by the disease of alcoholism, the illusion in my head that I can change people and make them who I want to be. My conception of love, you know, you were either on the offense or you were on the defense. You know, and what I know about being on either the offense or the defense today is if I'm on the offense, I'm trying to make something happen. And if I'm on the defense, I'm trying to stop something from happening. And to me, that's the complete opposite of what I have learned in Al-Anon about what love is and exactly what love means. I expected Butch's love to fix me. And I expected Butch's love to make me happy. And that's a really very unfair thing to put onto someone else, you know, that, you know, how I'm going to feel and how, what my life is going to be like is all on you and what you do and how you do it. And how, you know, and what I really do believe today is I really set him up for failure, because in reality, there's nothing he could have done, you know, because it was never enough. It was never, you know, Valentine's Day is still kind of a stickler for me, because man, I used to just use that to screw him to the cross, boy. I mean, that was because, you know, when you're married to a drunk, you're not getting flowers and freaking candy or cards on Valentine's Day. It's just not happening, you know. But boy, the day after Valentine's Day, you know, and then he's all, you know, remorseful and sad and hungover. And then it's just, you know, good. I do all this. I take care of the kids. And what do I get for Valentine's Day? Nothing. You know, it's just like, and again, that drama, that what I now refer to as a drama, trauma, and all of that. And that was my idea of love. You know what? Punishing the person that I loved. You know, how I'm affected by the disease of alcoholism. You know, it was like it wasn't bad enough. And what did I do but make it worse? And I'm not the drinker. You know, I'm not the person that did that stuff. You know, I'm, but still, I sometimes I think it's it's, you know, when I was doing inventory work and all of that kind of stuff, to actually see, you know, my behavior stone cold sober. I mean, when I went out after my husband because I was hurt by what he was doing with his drinking, I mean, I deliberately set out to hurt him back. Is that how you express love? Is that what's going on? No, but that's what the family disease of alcoholism channeled me, you know, to do. And then, you know, and our life was really pretty crappy there for a while. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. And where did I go from really? Because I want you to know that when Butch and I got married, even though we had our older son, and that was the driving force behind that, that I really did love Butch, and I believed he really loved me. And you know, we wanted to do the things, you know, when we got married that, you know, the minister said to honor and love and cherish each other. But what I didn't know and what Butch didn't know was, it wasn't just he and I that got married that day. It was also the family disease of alcoholism. You know, and I'm here to tell you the family disease of alcoholism doesn't honor any vows, doesn't care about who gets hurt or who doesn't get hurt. Family disease of alcoholism means to take down the family. And, you know, and my thing with Butch, you know, was always putting more pressure on him. He doesn't have enough responsibility. I'm going to give him some more, you know, and Earl was a result of, you know, trying to get Butch sober. And we all have our point in life here. And, you know, when you're having babies for the wrong reasons, you know, and all of that, because all of it was me on the offense. You know, here, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to force this situation. This is going to make him get sober. This is going to make him get sober. And then when you're trying to force something that you think you so desperately want, and that's the only way that you can be happy, what other way do you go but to all this anger, you know, which is the complete opposite of what love is supposed to be. And with that, I'll kind of let Butch talk about, like, when we were first married, what he remembers of it. And it's your turn
now. Oh, okay. Butch alcoholic? Gee, why do you drink?
Yes. Amen.
Beats me. I don't know. Anyhow, I loved Larsine when I first saw her. You know, and it was a good thing, but I had the disease of alcoholism, which I didn't know I had, and I just couldn't follow through, you know, like I wanted to, and that made me feel really guilty. And you know, I could also say, I guess I'm kind of dangerously naive for myself too, because I just, a lot of stuff she talks about, you know, I don't even remember catching any of it, you know what I mean, even though I was there, probably because I was drunk. But anyway, I never really gave any thought to her motivation behind the stuff we used to run around with. And, you know, I guess that's okay, because that's the way it was. But one of the things I do remember most that was most painful about my drinking was always trying to get back home. You know, I'd be in the bar and think, oh, I'll go on the next drink, I'll be done, I'll go home, and then I couldn't make it. And then you go home, you feel really guilty, and you feel crappy about what you've done, and you don't know why you drank so goddamn much. You know, why you stayed so long, because you just started to have one drink and then the night's gone. And then, you know, your wife's not happy because you've been an idiot again. And you go home and feel guilty and apologize and try not to do it again. But I didn't know what I was dealing with. You know, I had no choice when it came to drinking. I thought I did. For a long time, the alcohol fooled me into thinking that it was my choice all the time, because it worked so well when it worked. You know, it made me feel like I was on the planet where I should have been. You know, it made me feel complete. And I didn't see anything wrong with feeling like that. But, you know, as a typical alcoholic, I tended to overshoot the mark all the time. And, you know, so I just went on from there, you know, and it wasn't until we got in these programs that I started to learn how to really be able to love, because I wasn't capable of following through, you know, the way the alcoholism treated me and the way my character defects were so pumping around all the time, even though I didn't know I had them, but I had them. I was just trying to get through a day at a time here with this whole deal. And, you know, and we were just, it was a struggle, you know. I used to just, you know, I couldn't work on a regular basis. I just always had to drink, you know, and it got progressively worse as our time together more time, you know, longer we were together, the more aware of that became, and the worse that got. And so it was just really a crappy existence, but we were doing our best, you know. Sometimes you break through and that stuff would back off for a while, and then we could kind of get together and start to do stuff. But then inevitably I would do it again and it'd tear it all down, no matter how hard we worked at trying to put something back together again, you know. And that's not really my definition of love as I know it today, but it was the best I could do at the time. You know what I mean? I know in my heart I always loved Larsine, but I just had this, I couldn't get through it all the time and follow through. And that's, it really put me off. You know, and it was kind of hard, you know, the way she would react to a lot of stuff, you know, having to listen to all that stuff all the time when I really didn't do it to hurt her directly. It's just stuff that seemed to happen. You know what I mean? I wasn't out to hurt her. I never drank to hurt her or to make her feel crappy or any of that stuff. I just drank because I had to drink at the time. But then I had these consequences.
Deadly.
Deadly, yeah. Almost deadly consequences from doing that. And I'm grateful I don't have to do that anymore. Once we got in these programs, once I got sober, you know, it still took her a couple of years to start to go to Al-Anon after I was sober a couple of years. And that's when our life started to change for the better, you know, and we all know that. Those of you in recovery know how well that affects our lives if we care to participate in the good things that are in front of us to participate in. You know, not everybody that gets sober really develops their spiritual life all the time or the way they treat others. I've seen a lot of people, they're just still mad as hell and do crappy stuff. And, you know, I guess maybe that's their version of sobriety. But I like working the steps and getting close to my higher power and trying to bring it into my daily living. You know, it seemed to work really well for me so far. And I'm really grateful for that because I didn't get her to do anything. I didn't think, oh, I'll go to AA and everything will be freaking wonderful. You know, I didn't even know I was getting an AA before I got here. I went through a hospital program. I just knew I needed something to change. Something had to change my life because it was pretty freaking dreary at the end of my drinking. And thank God Alcoholics Anonymous was there for me. And I've been here, you know, I've been trying it ever since I first heard about it. I've been working at it every day. I haven't taken a day off from trying to work my program ever because it's very important to me. And love is just the outcome of that. I'm going to talk a little more about that a little later. I think it's time to let Earl say a bit.
Okay, I'll chime in.
Yeah, far away.
Well, everything they just talked about, I wasn't really there for, you know. I mean, my dad got sober when I was 3 years old. So for me, it was always being raised in an AA household. So I only knew love. You know, as far as I knew, they never argued about anything. And we spent our lives in AA, and that's just the normal life it was for me. You know, I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. We'd go to meetings all the time, and I'd get dragged along to conventions all the time as well. And growing up in that atmosphere was wonderful. You know, we're always surrounded by tons of love and family and friends, and it was a really nice way to grow up. You know, being in all these meetings and listening to all these speakers talk, you know, a lot of the stuff they were talking about being a small child always kind of went right over my head. You know, you'd think being raised in an AA family, the chances of you becoming an active alcoholic were 1,000,000 to 1, but I don't think there's anything anybody can do about that. With all the knowledge in the world, we are who we are, and we're going to have to go through what we have to go through. You know, my journey here started when I was about 12 years old and I started getting loaded. And, you know, my parents would go out to meetings and I'd hang out with friends and start getting high and going out to different concerts and just goofing off as a regular kid, you know. And things progressed really fast for me. By the time I was 16, I was completely strung out on amphetamines. And then away we went, and then turned 21 and then got right into drinking, and away we went, you know. And then I got sober when I was 35 years old, you know, and then we kind of had to start rebuilding our family again. A lot of the damage I caused, I never even noticed. You know, we speak of family love and all these things that we want to do for each other, but as an alcoholic, I never noticed the damage I was doing to my family or my loved ones. These are two people who I love most in the entire world. You know, why would I ever want to hurt them? And it never crossed my mind while I was out there drinking what was going on with them and all the stuff they had to go through as an active alcoholic. It's a very selfish disease. You know, and I'm not making this as an excuse, but that's just how it was for me. You know, I think if I would have known the toll it was taking on my parents, I don't know if I could have changed anything or not. I was so sick in my disease, I really couldn't tell you, you know, but I simply didn't notice. And it wasn't until I got sober that I began to start figuring things out and the exact what it took on everybody in our family. You know, I don't know if it almost ripped our family to shreds or not. We sat down a couple times and discussed what was going on, you know, when I made my amends and went through that whole process. And yeah, I guess that's all I really got right now as far as the early years go, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that fun? That's all he's got as far as the early years went. Ripped his mother's heart out, stomped it on the ground, and that's all he's got. So anyway, again, the family disease of alcoholism and, you know, when Butch first got sober, like Earl said, he was like 3 years old and our oldest son was five. And it was a wonderful thing to kind of bring them into. But I want you to know that when Butch got sober, I didn't go to Al-Anon at that time, you know, because as far as I was concerned, the problem was his. He needed to work on him. He needed to fix him. You know, I was fine and dandy just the way that I was. And in reality, what I know about those, you know, those first 2 years that my husband was sober is that is I got to see the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in action. And I watched my husband go from, you know, the drunk that he was, never there, not providing for us, all those things, you know, to being, you know, what I always thought would fix me. You know, he became a really good husband. He became a really good provider. He became a very good dad to our kids. Even though his last drunken Christmas, he did put the handlebars on Earl's big wheel on backwards, which Earl rode for many years that way. And
that's why I'm an alcoholic.
There we go. And but all those things happened, you know, all those things that I thought would fix me. And 2 years into Butch's sobriety, I'm here to tell you I was as angry as I've ever been in my life. And I don't think you can be that angry that doesn't come out in your parenting skills. I was very controlling of the boys. I remember when I can make your life miserable at any given moment.
Just go ahead and talk.
All right. So,
family love.
Yes, family love. But I remember when Butch went through the hospital, and I heard one of the counselors say that, you know, in her talk to us, you know, that, if, you know, that alcoholism might be hereditary. I mean, that was like a boing in my, because I remember going home and both of those boys who were little guys, I made them raise their right hand and promised me that they would not be alcoholic. And they did. We pinky sweared on it and the whole nine yards. You know, because I thought that would take care of it. And then I thought just having me as their mom would take care of it. And again, the lies that the family disease of alcoholism, because I couldn't even fathom the idea of them becoming alcoholics as well. And so, and like I say, Butch was, you know, 2 years sober. And what happened for me is one day I'm doing the chores, because the motto in my house is there is no fun until the chores are done. And I'm just that organized about things. And I remember Butch and the Earl and Bill being in the living room, and I heard them laughing. They were just having fun, just doing whatever they were doing, and they were laughing and cutting up. And as I come through the living room with my laundry basket in tow, there's just like dead silence in the room. You know, and that was the revelation to me, because that's what I bring to my family, you know. Because I'm so afraid that, you know, when I step in the room, I suck the joy out of the room is what I do. Because I ride them so hard, because I'm so afraid that if I don't, they're going to slip through my fingers. And I just had an awakening that day. And I knew that wasn't who I was supposed to be. And I knew that wasn't who I wanted to be. You know, so that's when I started going to Al-Anon. And then, you know, when you have little kids and you have, the dad's in Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm in Al-Anon, and we're both going to considerable meetings a week, you know, and we can't afford a babysitter all the time. So, you know, he's taking one kid, I'm taking one kid. Sometimes I'm taking two kids, you know, once in a while we get a babysitter. But they really did grow up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in Al-Anon. And I know that there's people in this room that Earl's known since he was just a little kid. And one of my great gratitudes to all of those people is, I remember one time when Earl was out there doing his deal and whatever, and he ran into one of our friends at the market who just went up to him and gave him a hug. You know, there was no criticism. There was no nothing else like that. You know, I think he always felt loved by the people in Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the example that Butch and I had about how to raise our kids and, you know, and how we wanted to raise our kids and that unconditional love thing that finally started coming through for me. But I'm going to tell you, you know, and it's always embarrassing for me to say this, but, you know, I grew up being hit. And even after I was in Al-Anon a while, I was still physically hitting my children. And again, it's not anything that I'm proud of, but these are the things I got to look at in an inventory that before I rationalized and justified my way out of. And it wasn't what I wanted to be doing. But, you know, coming here and learning, you can know a lot of stuff, but I am a real, real believer that you have to, you know, you have to, you can't think your way into good living. You have to live your way into good thinking. You know, and it's by taking the actions, you know, that our lives do actually change. It was by changing the way that I reacted to when they got in trouble. Because when Earl started getting in trouble, you know, I mean, and plus his brother went ahead of him, okay? Let me tell you, Bill was no easy piece of cake either. I mean, even though he's not the one that turned out alcoholic, and I was sure he was, he got busted for possession of cocaine at 16. And, you know, I mean, that was a ride with him. And then Earl was just right on, you know, as soon as we kind of got through Bill, Earl took off. And I was just sure I could hit it out of them. I could yell it out of them. I could punish it out of them, you know, even though I know that that wasn't what I wanted to have happen. And it was during one of those episodes, you know, when I was really angry and I was throwing things in my own house at 9 years in Al-Anon, you know, at my kids who weren't behaving. And I almost hit, I think, Bill with an ashtray up the side of his head. I missed him barely, but it was just watching. It was almost like an out-of-body experience watching me do that. And that's when, again, I heard God's voice in my head going, you don't need to do this anymore. And when I was able to turn Earl and Bill over to the care of God at that particular point in my life and just be the best mom I could be, and start learning to accept them for exactly who they were. And that was not easy to do. I know that when Earl started doing his thing and Bill was doing his thing, I don't think that Butch and I ever argued more in our marriage than we did at that particular time. Because I really wanted him to do something about them and what they were doing. And he wasn't in Al-Anon at that time, but I will tell you, he worked a much better Al-Anon program than I did at that time. I couldn't have told you that then. I can absolutely positively tell you that now. And I am really, really grateful that my husband kind of kept enough of a handle on me at that time, you know, that my behavior didn't drive our children away from us. Because that's what the family disease of alcoholism, I think, does. Because I get so fearful about what might happen to them, how that's going to affect me. And that fear, as you know, when I keep fear as the primary driving force behind me, instead of a loving God that I know is going to take care of us however he takes care of us, all problems pass. All things work themselves out one way or they work themselves out another. The bottom line is after they work themselves out, you know, what, you know, where do I want to be in the equation? You know, and I did want to be the loving mom and I did want to love my children unconditionally, but I had no clue how to do that because I didn't know about unconditional love and what that meant. And I remember one time talking to Carol about it. She made me go look it up, and you know what it says under unconditional? It says no conditions. You know, and we had the talk and she says, you know what? I know you love those kids and there's nothing they can do to make you not love them, but you have to accept them for who they are. But unacceptable behavior is unacceptable and they get to have consequences, you know, and because of Carol, you know, I would argue with these kids, you know, about their drinking and their using and what they would deny that they were doing it, but I can talk longer than they can. And then their eyes would eventually roll back in their heads and they would finally surrender for the day, you know, or whatever, until the very next time, you know, it came up again. And so Carol gave me this instruction. She goes, I know as a mom, you have to say stuff to them when they aren't doing stuff. She says, but you need to go in there and you need to say what the truth is in 30 seconds or less, which was like, are you kidding me? Talk about a miracle from God.
Carol's great.
Yeah, I know. Carol saved your butt more than you know. And, you know, but I remember the first time I did it, and that's when I went into Earl's room and I just said, I know you're doing this and I know you're doing this and I know you're doing that. And he goes, no, you're not. I go, I don't even need to prove it. I'm not going to. I'm just telling you, you're doing it, and I know you're doing it, and I don't know how much longer your dad and I are going to be able to deal with it. But I want you to know that I know. And we were done. You know, and then I felt like I answered my responsibility as a parent while still taking care of me and not batting my head up against a wall about, you know, trying to force a solution. You know, what I learned to come here with was the truth and love, and that's what helped me. Your turn.
Okay, good. Geez, yeah, when I first got sober, I freaking loved it. You know, it was like things finally made sense. My whole life started to make sense to me, or all the stuff I've been doing that I didn't know, but know what was going on with me. I started to learn about that. And that was a real relief, because I thought I was just crazy and it wasn't going to stop. You know, so when I got sober, it was such a relief to know there was a different way to go. It still took me a long time to understand that I wasn't going to get struck drunk, because I didn't quite understand that whole part about the obsession, even though I was doing it all the time, but it just took a while to sink in. And that's okay. I was 9 months sober before it dawned on me that I wasn't going to get drunk, you know, because so often while, you know, I was still practicing my disease, I would just be sitting there, and then it would just hit me that I had to go get something to drink. And I thought that was going to happen again. You know what I mean? Because it happened so often, and it was just really confusing to me. And the blackouts were confusing. I didn't even know what the hell those were. You know, so I was always freaked out by that, because, I mean, you know, oh, I just lost a few days of my life. You know, who do you talk to about that? You know, it's just one more thing you have to feel crappy about yourself for, and one thing you have to bury again, because you can't share that kind of stuff. At least I never heard anyone else talking about it till I got to AA. And then everyone's been doing it. It's like, okay, what a freaking relief. Plus, they gave me a way to go with this disease. You know, once they pointed out to me that I'm powerless over alcohol and my life become unmanageable. And I grasped that, you know, and talked about getting in touch with a higher power. And I started doing that slowly. You know, I still do it today. I'm still learning more about that, but it's so very important to try that on a daily basis, to attempt to get closer to my higher power and contact with my higher power, because that's where I need to be if I want to stay sober. You know, my lack of power is my dilemma, and my higher power will take care of that big hole that I used to fill with alcohol. And it's done it, you know, since I first got here, and it continues to do it today. But when, as far as, you know, with Larcine, I remember when I was home for a while and she asked me something about, you know, do you think we're going to be married or something like that? And I just, all I said was, time will tell, you know, and I wasn't being a wise ass. It was just, I don't know what's going to go on in life. You know what I mean? But I mean, I had every intention to stay in. I wasn't going anywhere. So that was my answer. You know, I just let go and let God, let's see where this goes for us. And I was feeling good about stuff. I mean, I didn't know she was having quite the hard time she was, because she never shared about what was going on inside her with me in those first couple of years of me being sober. And I thought she was happier because I wasn't drinking. I wasn't hearing any of that racket anymore. So I figured, well, something settled down, you know, and that was a good thing. You know, and I was busy trying to learn how to live life and show up. And I said I was going to show up and take care of the kids and go to work on a regular basis and all that stuff. And it was kept me busy, you know, through all that stuff. When she first started going to Al-Anon, right after she was in Al-Anon a little while, we started going to a couples meeting together. And that's where we started to really start to learn to communicate with each other, you know. I'd never heard about unconditional love all my life. What the hell is that? You know, I never heard about that before I got in recovery, you know, but it's a wonderful thing. And I had that actually for her back when I first met her, but I couldn't follow through like I wanted to. And so it was very confusing trying to get a straight line on that, even though it's really the truth about how I felt. But through this program and the steps and the people in it, I've learned what that's about and how to do that and how to stay on that keel that way. You know, it's been really, really a pretty good recovery. I've gone through a lot of different stuff. You know, you always go through stuff, you know, my parents have passed and things like that. But the point is that we stay sober through whatever goes on, you know, and I still look back at my life and things that went on, and I can see more and more where how far off base I was. Like Earl was talking about, Earl doing stuff earlier, you know, doing stuff, and it just doesn't sit right. You know what I mean? And you know, I'm closer with my family now than I've ever been. My immediate family, these guys, our son Bill, and my sisters, and them. I'm just closer with them now because I'm more open. Because of this program, you know, not because I'm a wonderful person, because I try and do this on a daily basis. And this is who I think I've always supposed to have been. Once I got the alcohol out of the way, I kind of felt like I was doing what I was supposed to have been doing most of my life, you know. And that changes on a daily basis, you know, because every day is a little bit different, you know. But I remember, too, I just try and do these principles a day at a time. And what comes out of that, you learn how to love. And learn how to accept love and how to even love yourself, which was kind of weird when I first thought. I thought, what are you even talking about here? But oh, it's just about, you know, basic self-esteem. It's all simple stuff. You know what I mean? You can say it's real complicated, but it boils right back down to just love. You know, I always like the Beatles song, you know, all you need is love. That kind of is plenty complicated enough for me. And I like the way that the words of that song go and how what it talks about. And that's a good thing. You know what I mean? I like that song a lot. You know, I started thinking about that when we were doing this, you know, let's talk about love. And I think, yeah, it's that Beatles song I like so much. And it's a good thing. You know, it's not a real complicated thing. It's just a matter of getting yourself out of the way enough where you can let other people into your life and participate with them. It's a spiritual thing, I think, too, love. It's a gift from God. I know that. I ignored it for a long time. But now, the longer I'm sober, the more I can feel love around me, and I just thank God for it on a daily basis, you know. And hope we're not getting too serious here.
Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about when they were doing their drug thing?
Oh, yeah, when the kids were doing their thing. I just, my older son was doing some stuff, and he kind of got set up to get busted to kind of take the fall for this. Anyway. He had to go through all that stuff. Then we had to take him to where they did the thing, the time on the weekends, you know.
Juvenile hall.
Yeah. Had to take the juvenile hall. He had to get, you know, inducted in there. And then he had to go out and work with the gangbangers along the freeway. And he saw how they acted and how they lived. And it really brought around to his – he got to see what life could be like if he didn't change what he was doing. Because, you know, it was just real crazy for him. And it really – turned him around, you know, not instantly, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, anyway, but it changed his point of view on what he was doing with his life to an extent. And a lot of his friends were doing the same kind of stuff, but they all kind of outgrew it, you know. I mean, I never did, but he did, thank God. And he's just a social guy. He has his beers and stuff, but, you know, it's not the prime directive for him, you know. And then Merle was doing his stuff. I knew what he was up to. I used to do the same kind of stuff. You know, I remember talking to one, but I said, well, do you see any of the neighbors out in the garage at 2 a.m. wandering around? I don't see anyone else in the neighborhood doing that. He just, just like I would have answered my dad, I guess. But, you know, and I never really gave him a lot of crap about it. You know what I mean? I just let him go, gave him to God, and just hoped that things would work out. And they worked out the way they were supposed to. You know what I mean? I don't have to get in there and bang it out with him over nothing. You know, and I think I did pretty good with that. And I learned that in this program, you know, let go and let God. And that's exactly what it means. You know, so I'm just trying to do that with him too. Just like I do with my wife, you know, when she was doing, having her stuff here and there, I just had to turn it over to God because I know I can't run it. I'll just mess it up if I try and straighten any things out. So I just go to a higher power. You know, it works really well for me. And I'll let Earl talk a bit.
Yeah, and thank God for it. You know, I mean, you think growing up in an AA house and having a junkie kid, they would have been pushing that big book in my face or leaving literature out for me. And thank God they never did. You know, they loved me enough to leave me alone and let me lead my life. And then when it was time to come home, I'd either come home or not. And that's something I was always grateful for. You know, growing up in AA with every AA member around me when I was doing my thing, they always left me alone and all they did was give me a hug. They never preached to me about anything. And what that did was leave the door open for me for when it was time for me to get sober. you know, the first time I actually held a big book is the day I got sober. I remember, I won't explain the whole story before that, but I remember my father called the following day, you know, after I had gotten sober and gone through a couple different things, you know, where I first decided to stop drinking. Maybe I should just tell you the whole story so you know what the hell I'm talking about. How about that?
Anyhow.
This is my life. These are the details. Let's they leave out constantly.
Go ahead.
Anyway, I was about 35 years old, 36, I think. It's hard to remember now, but I was about 36 years old, and I remember waking up on my floor one more time. And I remember peeling myself up off the ground and going over to the refrigerator and pulling out my bottle of peppermint schnapps and taking a couple sips because that's how I start every day. And then I go take a couple painkillers and I sit down and chain smoke cigarettes all day. You know, that's what my life had become. Most of my teeth were gone at this point. Half my hair was cut because apparently I like to black out and cut my hair, you know, dirty nails, house reeking, stale cigarettes and the whole bit. But anyway, what was different about that day is I remember around 10 o'clock, the TV twanged off and I was going out to have a smoke and I caught my reflection in the TV. And that was my moment of clarity. You know, it was at that moment that I felt the presence of God around me and I kind of knew it was over. You know, I remember running out of the house and freaking out because I knew it was all over now. You know, I really can't explain to you how I felt at the time, but I knew it was it. You know, I spent the rest of the day curl up in a ball in my bed, and that entire evening curl up in a ball as well. I just talked to God the whole time to hold my hand because I knew I was done drinking. Anyway, the following day, the phone rang, and it was my father, and he was offering me a job because I was in construction at the time to help a neighbor build a fence or something like that. And I was about an inch away for asking for help, but I just couldn't quite spit it out. So he gave me the information, and I hung up the phone, and then about 2 minutes later, he called me back because he forgot to give me the number for that guy, and it was then that I told him that I needed to talk to him about what was going on with me. He said, when? And I said, right now. And he said, well, come on over. You know, so I drove over to my father's house. My mom was at work at the time, I remember, and I knocked on the door, and I walked in, and I sat down, and I finally started telling the truth about what was going on with me, where I'd been for the past 20-odd years and what I'd been up to. And all the lies I told and all the dope I sold out of his house and everything I was on and how I was petrified to leave the house without being loaded. I kind of went through the whole deal of my entire life and finally started telling him, you know, the truth about what was going on with me. And I remember he stood up and he gave me a hug and he walked into his office and he came out with a big book and a meeting directory. And he said, Earl, I love you very much, but I can't walk this path for you. You're going to have to do it yourself. But if you ever need help, I'll always be here for you. Now, here's a list of names of a couple of guys. Here's a meeting directory, and I want you to go home, and I want you to read the doctor's opinion. And he said, if I could see any of myself in the doctor's opinion, that I might have a problem with alcohol. You know, I went home, and I read the doctor's opinion, and I was hooked. It was the first paper I ever read that kind of explained what was going on with me. I remember being flabbergasted how a guy could write a paper about my drinking some 60 years before I was even born. You know, and that was really my introduction into AA. I went to a meeting a couple of days later, and it kind of went on from there. You know, and now being able to share this program with my parents is just such a blessing. I mean, the fact that all three of us can sit here on a Saturday night and actually want to sit together on a Saturday night and spend some time together is wonderful. You know, this program has really made us, I think, grow as a family. You know, there's something that we can share that's really special now, and we can joke about it and tease each other about. You know, because if my mom starts going off on me about something that I'm not doing right, I could be like, hey, maybe you should call your sponsor and work the steps now. And she'll be like, shut up, you little shit, you know. So then we kind of go back and forth like that. And it's something really cool that we can share together, you know, and we can laugh about a lot of stuff now. You know, and we don't have any secrets anymore with each other. We can really talk about what's going on with us. And being able to share in this program with you guys and together as a family has just meant the world, I think, to all of us. You know, I mean, what a blessing that is, you know. We've grown a lot closer for it, and we get to hang out all the time now. I love spending time with my family. You know, I miss so many years out there drinking, and, you know, I'd always show up for Christmas late, and then I'd always leave early, always loaded at Thanksgiving. I can remember going to one of my dad's AA birthdays on Valium because I thought it'd be disrespectful to drink. You know, stuff like that. You know, all this stuff I missed, and all these years of life I missed. All these things I cut close because I didn't want to be there because my disease was kind of taking over. Yeah. And I'd always rather be somewhere else. You know what I mean? Now I can't think of anywhere else I'd rather be than hanging out with these guys and sharing this program with you. You know, how about you, Mom?
Okay, yeah. Yeah. And then he makes his mother cry. He's such a little booger. But anyway, you know, when Earl ended up getting sober, you know, I remember that Butch had said, you know, well, Earl came over, because he called me up at work and he goes, and I remember Butch saying to me, you were right. And I go, and I remember saying to him, well, I'm always right. What did you finally figure out I was right about? And, you know, and he said, you know, Earl said he's an alcoholic, you know, and again, it was just kind of like, and I go, well, what happened? And he's like, oh, I gave him a big book and, you know, a 12 and 12 and some phone numbers. And I sent him home and I'm like, you idiot. You know, I mean, we have to strike while the iron is hot, you know, and one more time, you know, I want to delve in there and I want to be the one, you know, to go do all this. And, you know, and I remember calling him, asking if I could make him soup, you know, like one more time, soup is a cure for alcoholism and, you know, whatever was going on. But
I accepted that offer, by the way. Yeah. When you're coming down, your mom's soup is wonderful. I mean, it was great. It meant the world to me, especially spending those first couple of days in sobriety. I spent it kind of with them. Yeah. And I was living with a couple of roommates at the time, and I remember spending about 2 or 3 days with you guys here, just kind of coming down. And, you know, I cried a lot during those first couple of days of sobriety, you know, because I hadn't felt any emotions in I don't know how long. And when you first get sober, you are just flooded with feelings. I mean, it just knocks you down really hard. And being able to share that with you guys was just wonderful. And it was the support of it too, you know. Yeah, we hung out, but you never discussed Alcoholics Anonymous with me nor Al-Anon. We just kind of hung out and loved each other as a family, right? As far as I remember.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think?
I know. So anyway, as Earl said, you know, but it was, again, it was the program of Al-Anon talking to my sponsor, us loving our kid unconditionally. You know, he reached out for help and we wanted to let him know we were there to support him and love him. But he was the one, you know, sobriety was his gift. You know, it wasn't ours to give him, you know, and he would have to do the things that he needed to do. And, you know, and he ended up, you know, like the, you know, I asked Butch, what three names did you give? And he told me, and I was okay with two of them, but one I was not happy about. And I'd rather he hadn't given that particular person's name just because. And because I picked out my kid sponsor, and this guy was not on the short list. And guess which guy ended up being Earl's sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, who is now like one of my favorite people on the face of the planet. You know, because again, one more time, what I think is going to fix them, what I think is good for them. You know, and you got to know, I'm 30 something years in the program at this point, you know, and this is still what gets driven home to me day after day when I think about family and I think about where our family is it's about, you know, none of us is perfect here. None of us has all the answers for the other guy, but we can love and we're all going to go through hard times and difficult times, you know, but when I do love them unconditionally, when I accept them for who they are and what they're going through and the changes that happen in their life, whether or not it's the path that I necessarily think I want them on or not, my life gets a lot better. I feel a lot better about myself as a mom. You know, when I let Butch be Butch and I don't try to make him be somebody that I want him to be, so it looks good to everybody else. And then it looks good to me, like I'm a really good picker, you know, and all of that. You know, it's just all that garbage. It's all that old garbage that I kind of learned growing up because it's what other people say, what other people think. And, you know, and that whole unconditional thing has meant so much to my family and my relationship with them. You know, one of my really difficult relationships is with my mom. So, Philo, I really, I just did and related to you so much. My mom is still alive. My mom is going to be 88 pretty soon. And my mom is very conditional in her love. And that's difficult for me because when you live in this environment, you know, I recoil from that. And that makes my relationship with my mom difficult because her love is conditional. I mean, it's always based on this, whatever you do, it's not enough. It's what's the next thing and what's the next thing and what she expects of you and how you're supposed to treat her because she is now the patriarch of the family and just all this stuff that's always coming out. They think it's funny, you know, but whatever. But to me, you know, it's difficult. Because inside of me, I love my mom, I do. But my mom doesn't understand about what really love is that I've learned here. And I think that's sometimes what makes my relationship with my mom difficult. So I have great admiration, you know, what I've learned exactly what Philo has is that, you know, it's not my job to be the mom in this instance. It's my job to be the daughter. And my job is to be the best daughter that Al-Anon has taught me how to be, regardless of what everybody else is doing. And subsequently, I try, and, you know, and it's hard for me, you know. I mean, it's my job to be the wife, not the husband. Now, we all know I'd be a better husband, but it's not my job, okay? It's just not my job, so I don't get to do it. And I have to accept that. And when I do, I have a wonderful relationship with my husband, because guess what? My husband, my son, my other son, they have amazing qualities. They're amazing people, but they are not me. And that's what's so fun. You know, I remember one time when I was having a particularly hard time with Butch and what he was doing, I remember going to Carol with it, and Carol goes, you know, if Butch did everything you wanted him to do exactly how he wanted you to do, you know, like you want him to do it, then he would be you. She goes, do you want to be married to you? No, I don't want to be married to me. There's only one more scene in this marriage. There can't be two. We'd kill each other, you know, but one more time. And then I got to just let Butch be Butch. And when I let him be him, our marriage got so much better. And when I learned to pay him compliments, our marriage got so much better. And I've heard people share about that all today, you know, to say thank you, you know, for going to work, you know, thank you for taking care of our family. Thoughts that would never cross my mind. God forbid I say thank you, you know, or that you're doing a good job, because then, you know, I got to keep the pressure on you, you know. And again, bad old thinking from what I grew up with, misinformation from people with misinformation. You know, when I learned to be complimentary to my husband, you know, it was like, you know, I could really let the love out, but I'm afraid to let the love out because it might come back and hurt me, because that's what I learned growing up. Just don't love, because it's too painful to do that. You know, but it was in trusting you guys loving me unconditionally, loving my family unconditionally, you know, that lesson has finally really, you know, gone on. And so, and I'm trying to bring that to my mom to the best of my ability. Sometimes I'm really good at it, and some days not so good, but I really do work on it. And it's, you know, hearing people like Philo share their story, you know, that just gives me that courage and that conviction and that truth. Because one thing, you know, in Al-Anon, when you hear the truth, you know it. You know, so I am really, really grateful for that. So you guys want to make any closing comments? It's on you now.
Yeah, just I'm really grateful for the life we live today and how we can share with each other. You know, we're, three of us are on a program. Our other son, Bill, is like, he's in the program with us. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
Because he's right on board with the unconditional love. I don't know where he learns all this stuff from, probably from just being mature adult. But he comes up with just good stuff that fits with all we've been talking about here tonight. You know what I mean? And I'm really grateful for that. You know, I would hate to have him be excluded, you know, from what we're doing here with our love and everything. And he's not. And I'm grateful for that. Yeah, I'm really glad Larsine is in Al-Anon. You know, I know our lives are much better because of that. She's a better person because of that. You know, I didn't think she needed any so much work done to her, but obviously she did, you know, and she's done it, you know, and continues to do it on a daily basis. And I'm real proud of her for that. You know, I'm grateful for that, to have you in my life doing what you're doing. And same with Earl. It's so good to see him being sober. You know, it's the best 12-step call I ever went on. And it's just fun. Now we can joke about the horrible past we used to have to live, you know, and it doesn't hurt like it used to, because we've taken care of it. And we try and do that with everything in our lives. That's just kind of the philosophy we've developed just for being in this program, is just take care of whatever's going on and try and keep it in the best light possible, not avoiding the reality of it, but, you know, keep it in its proper perspective. You know, and I've learned, this wasn't my idea. This is just things that I've grown into from being around this program and trying to apply these principles on a daily basis, you know, as best I can. And that's enough. You know, I don't have to be perfect. I can't quote you pages in the big book or any of that stuff, but I know what it's about. And we can talk about that. I'm just glad that love is a good subject, you know. And again, go listen to the Beatles song. And I'll tell you what I think. Thank you. Go ahead, Earl.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for being here. And thanks for the invitation to come speak as well. sorry, we do not have the gift of gab. My mother does, but we always do the best we can. We're kind of winging it here because the three of us have never spoken together before. Yeah. So we're doing our best, and I hope we can at least help you guys out a little bit with what you're all going through. You know, we do, like they said, you know, on a daily basis, we all have our problems and we all go through a lot of stuff. You know, with, you know, we joke around and goof off a lot, you know, but, you know, I do take things seriously that go on in our family, you know. I'm sorry to laugh about grandma and all that, but I have to laugh about it because it's more fun than crying about it or getting upset about it. So that's kind of how we get through a lot of that.
Because she's not your mother.
She's not my mom. She's my grandma. But it's a whole other story we don't need to get into right now. But I just want you to know that, you know, we are very supportive and love each other very much. And that's a lot of the stuff we learned in this program. You know, I found myself on the beach today and I was thinking about where my family would be if we had never got into AA, you know. And I wouldn't have a father today, and who knows what'd be going on with my mom today, and who knows where I'd wind up today. And it's something to be really grateful for. You know, I mean, we are truly blessed to live this life together, and I'm very, very grateful to all of you guys. Thank you so much for letting us speak tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys for being part of it.
Absolutely.
All right, you guys, you rocked. Let's give him a hand. Unmute yourself. Let them hear some people noises.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.